everybody to Santa Claus's party. You may be sure both rich and poor are welcome at Santa's door. You don't need a ticket to Santa Claus's party. A lot of toys for girls and boys and plenty of fun in store.
Ho, ho, ho! And Merry Christmas from the Cracking the Spine crew.
Merry Christmas!
I'm Sean, who happens to have the same initials as Santa Claus.
That's true.
Just saying.
I'm Josh, who happens to have the same initials as Jesus Christ.
Poor Christ. Jesus H. Christ.
And I'm Zane.
What's your tie-in?
I don't know.
ZB.
ZB?
Zoobly Zoo. There it is.
We probably had a Christmas special. But this is the Cracking the Spine Christmas special. We had such a good response from our Halloween spectacular story reading that we decided to give it a Yuletide spin.
Halloween was months ago.
I know, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it.
And this is getting posted on Christmas Eve, so Merry Christmas Eve. We hope that you are enjoying your night and
that
spending
means drunk.
It with family. And you can kick back and relax and let Cracking the Spine
if you have a nice,
through.
If you have a drive here in the car, go ahead and put some Cracking the Spine on. We'll get you there with a nice tail.
You're driving
or
on Christmas Eve, I'm very sorry.
Everybody drives on Christmas Eve.
But we're here to soothe.
Unless a tree falls on their car. And they can't go anywhere.
We don't talk about that.
All right.
That never happened.
Okay. Fair enough. So, we're going to bring you three short tales of the holiday season, and then we're going to take a week off because
we earned it.
Exactly. So, you know, we'll give you an opportunity to go back and listen to some of the archives or look at your family, you know, not just, you know, binge our podcast or just binge our podcast.
Yeah, maybe this is your chance to get caught up.
Exactly.
We're your new family.
So, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, it'll be our first Christmas story. Stick around.
There'll be rides on Santa's reindeer for the Christmas time patrol. If you're good, they'll stop at Santa's shop way up at the old North Pole. Come on, everybody, to Santa Claus's party. You may be sure both rich and poor are welcome at Santa's door. You don't need a ticket to Santa Claus's party. A lot of toys for girls and boys.
Here's Sean with a selection from Holidays on Ice by David Sedaris.
So just a little setting the scene. The arts and entertainment section of a newspaper. All right?
Okay.
Theater critic.
Okay.
So here we go.
On it.
Front row center with Thaddeus Bristol. Trite Christmas. Scottsfield's young hams offer the blandest of holiday fare. The approach of Christmas signifies three things: bad movies, unforgivable television, and even worse theater. I'm talking bone-crushing theater, the type our ancient ancestors used to oppress their enemies before the invention of the stretching rack. We're talking torture on a par with the Scottsfield Dinner Theater's 1994 revival of Come Blow Your Horn, a production that violated every tenet of the Human Rights Accord. To those of you who enjoy the comfort of a nice set of thumbscrews, allow me to recommend any of the crucified holiday plays and pageants currently eliciting screams of mercy from within the confines of our local elementary and middle schools.
Yep.
I will, no doubt, be taken to task for criticizing the work of children. But, as any pathologist will agree, if there's a cancer, it's best to treat it as soon as possible.
Wow.
If you happen to stand over 4 feet tall, the agony awaiting you at Sacred Heart Elementary began the moment you took your seat. These were mean little chairs, corralled into a theater haunted by the lingering stench of industrial-strength lasagna. My question is not why they chose to stage the production in a poorly designed cafeteria, but why they chose to stage it at all. The story of the first Christmas is an overrated clunker of a holiday pageant, best left to those looking to cure their chronic insomnia. Although the program listed no director, the apathetic stage suggested the limp, partially paralyzed hand of Sister Mary Elizabeth Bronson, who should have been excommunicated after last season's disastrous Thanksgiving program. Here again, the first through third grade actors graced the stage with an enthusiasm most children reserve for a smallpox vaccination. One could hardly blame them for their lack of vitality, as the stingy, uninspired script consists not of springy dialogue, but rather a deadening series of pronouncements. Mary to Joseph. I am tired.
Joseph to Mary. We will rest here for the night. There's no fire, no give and take. And the audience soon grows weary of this passionless relationship. In the role of Mary, 6-year-old Shannon Burke just barely manages to pass herself off as a virgin. A cloying, preening stage presence. Her performance seemed based on nothing but an annoying proclivity toward lifting her skirt and, on rare occasion, opening her eyes. As Joseph, second grader Douglas Trazar, needed to be reminded that although his character did not technically impregnate the Virgin Mother, he should behave as though he were capable of doing so. Thrown into the mix were a handful of inattentive shepherds and a trio of gift-bearing 7-year-olds who could probably give the Three Stooges a run for their money. As for the lighting, Sacred Heart Elementary chose to rely on nothing more than the flashbulbs ignited by the obnoxious stage mothers and fathers who had created these zombies, staggering back and forth across the linoleum floor dining hall. Pointing to the oversized crate that served as a manger, one particularly insufficient wise man proclaimed, "A child is bored." Yes, well, so is this adult.
Oh!
Once again, the sadists at the Jane Snow Hernandez Middle School have taken up burning their pokers in an attempt to prod A Christmas Carol into some form of submission. I might have overlooked the shoddy production values and dry, leaden pacing, but these are 6th graders we're talking about and they ought to know better. There's really no point in adapting this Dickensian stinker unless you're capable of looking beyond the novel's dime store morality and getting to what little theatrical meat the story has to offer. The point is to eviscerate the gooey center, but here it's served up as the entree, and a foul pudding it is.
Oh my god.
Most of the blame goes to the director, 11-year-old Becky Michaels, who seems to have picked up her staging secrets from the school's crossing guard. She tends to clump her actors, moving them only in groups of 5 or more. A strong proponent of trendy, racially mixed casting, Michaels gives us a black Tiny Tim, leaving the audience to wonder, what is this supposed to be adopted? It's a distracting move, wrong-headed and pointless. The role was played by young Lamar Williams, who, if nothing else, managed to sustain a decent limp. The program noted that he'd recently lost his foot to diabetes, but that was reason enough to cast him? As Tiny Tim, the boy spends his stage time essentially trawling for sympathy, stealing focus from even the brightly lit exit sign. I was gagging from the smell of spray-painted sneakers, and if I see one more top hat made from an oatmeal canister, I swear to God I'm going to pull out a gun. The problem with all of these shows stems partially from their maddening egregiousness to eagerness to please. With smiles stretched tight as bungee cords, these hopeless amateurs pranced and gambled across local stages, hiding behind their youth and begging, practically demanding, we forgive their egregious mistakes. While billing themselves as holiday entertainment, none of these productions came close to capturing the true spirit of Christmas. This glaring irony seemed to escape the throngs of ticket holders who ate these undercooked turkeys right down to the bone. Here were audiences that chuckled at every technical snafu and applauded riotously each time a new character wandered out onto the stage. With the close of every curtain, they leapt to their feet in one ovation after another, leaving me wedged into my doll-sized chair and wondering, is it just them, or am I missing something?
Dude.
Great.
That was great.
David Sedaris, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back with another story. Holiday shoppers to Cracking the Spine's Christmas special. Up next, Josh is going to be reading A Letter to Santa Claus by Mr. Mark Twain.
This is really dated. It's really dated.
Okay.
It's from like 1870.
It's okay.
I'm going to do my best Mark Twain, okay?
Okay.
My dearest Susie Clemens, I have received and read all the letters which you and your little sister have written me by the hand of your mother and your noises.
Noises?
I have also read those which you little people have written me with your own hands. For although you did not use any characters that are in grown people's alphabet, you used the characters that all children in all lands on earth and in the twinkling stars use. And as all my subjects in the moon and children and use no character but that, you will easily understand that I can read you and your baby sister's jagged and fantastic marks without any trouble at all. But I had trouble with those letters which you dictated through your mother and your noises, for I am a foreigner and cannot read English writing well. You will find that I made no mistakes about the things which you and your baby, which you and the baby ordered in your own letters. I went down your chimney at midnight when you were asleep and delivered them all myself and kissed both of you too, because you are good children, well trained, nice mannered, and about the most obedient little people I ever did see.
It's like Twain's here.
It's like, oh my god, it's so lifelike.
But in the letter which you dictated, there were some words which I could not make out for certain, and one or two small orders which I could not fulfill because we ran out of stock. Oh my god. Our last lot of kitchen furniture for dolls has just gone to a very poor little child in the North Star away up. In the cold country above the Big Dipper. Your mama can show you that star and you will say, Little Snowflake, for that is the child's name. I'm glad you got that furniture, for you need it more than I. That is, you must write that with your own hand, and Snowflake will write you an answer. I don't know who Snowflake is. If you only spoke it, she wouldn't hear you. Make your letter light and thin, for the distance is great, and the postage is very heavy. This kid's sending letters to the stars?
Dude, to the moon!
Mark Twain was high as shit when he wrote this. There was a word or two in your mama's letter which I couldn't be certain of. I took it to be a trunk full of dolls' clothes? Is that it? I will call at your kitchen door about 9 o'clock this morning to inquire. But I must not see anybody, and I must not speak to anybody but you. This is getting weird. When the kitchen doorbell rings, George must be blindfolded and sent to open the door. Then he must go back to the dining room or the china closet and take the cook with him. There's a lot of rules, Santa. You must tell George he must walk on tiptoe and not speak, otherwise he will die someday.
Oh my god.
That's my favorite line.
Simpler times. Simpler times.
1870s, man. Then you must go up to the noisery and stand up on a chair or the noises bed and put your car to the speaker tube that leads down to the kitchen, and when I whistle through it, you must speak in a tube and say, Welcome, Santa Claus! Then I will ask whether it was a trunk you ordered or not. If you say it was, I shall ask you what color you want the trunk to be. Your mama will help you to name a nice color, and then you must tell me every single thing in detail which you want the trunk to contain. Man, this is like a bonanza Christmas. Then when I say goodbye and Merry Christmas to my little Susie Clemens, you must say, Goodbye, good old Santa. I thank you very much, and please tell that little snowflake I will look at her star tonight, and she must look down here. Okay. I will be right in the West Bay window. All right. And every fine night, I will look at her star and say, I know somebody up there, and I like her too.
What?
And then you must go down to the library and make George close all the doors that open into the main hall, and everybody must keep still for a little while.
Man, Santa's giving all the orders.
Yeah, now, right? Man.
I will go to the moon and get those things in a few minutes, and I will come down that chimney that belongs to the fireplace that is in the hall. If it is a trunk you want, because I couldn't get such a thing as a trunk down a nursery chimney. You know. Obviously. People may talk if they want, until they hear my footsteps in the hall. Then you tell them to keep quiet a little till I go back to the chimney. Maybe you will not hear my footsteps at all. So you may go now and then go to sleep and so you may go now and peep through the dining room doors, and by you will see that thing which you want right under the piano in the drawing room, for I shall put it there. If I should leave any snow in the hall, you must tell George to sweep it up into the fireplace. For I haven't time to do such things. So he's making a mess and he's leaving it for George. Whoever this George is he a butler?
Poor George.
George must not use a broom, but a rag. Wow. Else he will make me die someday. You must watch George and not let him run into danger. If my boot should leave a stain on the marble, George must not hollystone it away. It's a hollystone.
It's a thing.
Cleaning utensil?
No, it's that thing, that Christmas thing. Keep going.
Leave it there and always, leave it there always in memory of my visit. And whenever you look at it or show it to anybody, you must let it remind you to be a good little girl. Whenever you are naughty and somebody points to that mark, which your good old Santa Claus boots made on the marble, what will you say, little sweetheart? Goodbye! For a few minutes, till I come down to the world and ring the kitchen doorbell. Your loving Santa Claus, who people sometimes call the Man in the Moon.
Oh, yeah. We'll be right back.
A Christmas tree so high, it pokes right through the sky. And Santa will be there to call Merry Christmas to you all. Come on, everybody.
And now with another story about Christmas cheer is Zane Bauer reading The Gift by Ray Bradbury.
Tomorrow would be Christmas. And even while the three of them rode to the rocket port, the mother and father were worried. It was the boy's first flight into space, his very first time in a rocket.
I knew it was about space.
And they wanted everything to be perfect. So when, at the customs table, they were forced to leave behind his gift, which exceeded the weight limit by no more than a few ounces, and the little tree with the lovely white candles, they felt themselves deprived of the season and their love.
And Homeland Security, man.
Dude, space shuttle security?
The boy was waiting for them in the terminal room. Walking toward him after their unsuccessful clash with the interplanetary officials, the mother and father whispered to each other. What shall we do? Nothing. Nothing. What can we do? Silly rules. And he so wanted the tree. The siren gave a great howl, and people pressed forward into the Mars rocket. The mother and father walked at the very last, their small pale son between them, silent. I'll think of something, said the father. What? Asked the boy. And the rocket took off, and they were flung headlong into dark space. The rocket moved and left fire behind, and left Earth behind, on which the date was December 24th, 2052, heading out into a place where there was no time at all, no month, no year, no hour.
Thank you, Ray Bradbury. Ray Bradbury gets it.
They slept away the rest of the first day. Near midnight, by their Earth time New York watches, the boy awoke and said, I want to go look out the porthole. There was only one port, a window of immensely thick glass of some size, up on the next deck. Not quite yet, said the father. I'll take you up later. I want to see where we are and where we're going. I want you to wait for a reason, said the father. He'd been lying awake, thinking, turning this way and that, thinking of the abandoned gift, the problem of the season, the lost tree, and the white candles. And at last, sitting up, no more than 5 minutes ago, he believed he had found a plan. He need only carry it out, and this journey would be fine and joyous indeed. "Son," he said, "in exactly 1.5 hour, it will be Christmas." "Oh," said the mother, dismayed that he had mentioned it. Somehow, she had rather hoped that the boy would forget. The boy's face grew feverish, and his lips trembled. "I know, I know. Will I get a present? Will I? Will I have a tree? You promised." "Yes, yes, all that and more," said the father. The mother started, "But I mean it," said the father. "I really mean it. All and more, much more. Excuse me now. I'll be back." He left them for about 20 minutes. When he came back, he was smiling. "Almost time." "Can I hold your watch?" asked the boy, and the watch was handed over, and he held it ticking in his fingers as the rest of the hour drifted by in fire and silence and unfelt motion. "It's Christmas now! Christmas! Where's my present?" "Here we go," said the father, and took his boy by the shoulder and led him from the room, down the hall, up a rampway, his wife following. "I don't understand," she kept saying. "You will. Here we are," said the father. They had stopped at the closed door of a large cabin. The father tapped 3 times and then twice in a code. The door opened and the light in the cabin went out, and there was a whisper of voices. "Go on in, son," said the father. "What? It's dark. I'll hold your hand. Come on, Mama." They stepped into the room and the door shut, and the room was very dark indeed. And before them loomed a great glass eye, the porthole, a window 4 feet high and 6 feet wide, from which they could look out into space. The boy gasped. Behind him, the father and the mother gasped with him, and then in the dark room, some people began to sing. "Merry Christmas, son," said the father. And the voices in the room sang the old, the familiar carols, and the boy moved forward slowly until his face was pressed against the cool glass of the port. And he stood there for a long, long time, just looking and looking out into space and the deep night at the burning and the burning of 10 billion white and lovely candles.
That's beautiful.
That was awesome.
Christmas, happy holidays, and happy new year.
Be safe, and please come on back and listen to us here on Cracking the Spine.
Bye.